Lots of laughs as well.
I love the Twitter account. It's great. I follow it a great deal, and even while I understand not even half of it, I still love it.
What perfect endorsement could you have?
The Great Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the Great Cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks, champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer Podcast. There are literally no words, no turn of phrase, no introduction that will do justice to describe Henningley in the third test of this Ashes series. As if Australia losing the Bledisloe Cup 36-0 last week wasn't bad enough, Ben Stokes does that in this week's episode of I Don't Know Why I Do This To Myself. We'll talk about it all. The Labuschagne highs, the 67 lows, the missed runouts, the drop catches, Jack Leach's 1 of 17, lifetime specsaver deals, Stokes' switch hits, Stokes' 8 sixes, Stokes' everything. And in a world where we just want consistency, nothing is as consistent as umpire Joel Wilson. Hashtag RTJC involves Jofra Archer's watch, an American playing cricket in England, shadow batting, and another edition of I Played Against a Current Test Player. My name is Ian Higgins, and I'm joined by Dave Edwards in Sydney and Sam Perry in Melbourne. Boys, did you catch the cricket?
G'day, Higgos. G'day, Dave. I caught the cricket, and can I just say, if you are English listening to this show, intravenously connect any medical equipment you can to your deepest vein. Do it for the entire podcast.
The deepest vein possible.
Yes, because I don't know about you guys. I guess that's why we're on this podcast. But I did have a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach this morning that I hadn't felt since the North Sydney Bears lost against Newcastle in 1997 to a Matthew Johns field goal. And I've been oscillating today on this. It was truly gutting, and it felt bad. And then you think, why do I concern myself with these bat and ball games? I'm a 34-year-old man, possibly with a mental illness. I've got to stop trivialising this stuff. And then I thought, no, this is good because I'm feeling something. This is life. Isn't life good that it can produce this? Sport, as Roy Masters said on the weekend on Offsiders, wonderful show, you know, sport is still the greatest unscripted drama. Netflix has nothing on this shit. Yeah. And then, yeah, Ben Stokes, fuck me, stick cricket. Jesus, what a player.
Oh.
That's it. I caught the cricket, yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? I mean, now...
It was.
Oh my God, we're meant to feel, aren't we? I feel nothing.
Really?
Well, no, I've been processing it. It's been a little bit of time now. I've had a bit of time to take it in. I mean, I don't know where to go with this podcast. I mean, what I'm going to say is that there was nothing we could have done. One bloke had an absolute worldie. He had a day out, and that's the industry term for what happened. He had a day out. One bloke went out there, banged it all around the park, and we just couldn't do anything. And there was nothing we can do. And I don't think there's any need for an autopsy here. I mean, we don't need to deconstruct or, you know, get the coroner involved here. The team is already saying, let's move on, forget it happened. It's easier to deal with it that way, obviously, than to reflect and point fingers, which we'll obviously do over the next 20 minutes. But, you know, we live in the era of cancel culture and someone has to get cancelled. So who do we blame for this? What do we do? Are we cooked as a country, as a cricketing nation? Or do we just write this off as an anomaly, wash our hands of it? But, I mean, you guys can agree, there's nothing worse in cricket than playing against a team and some bloke is just fucking teeing off and there's nothing you can do.
Edo's, my takeaway from it was I like to pretend sometimes that I really don't care about the cricket, but, like, watching those last 70 runs tick down, not going to lie, England enjoy this. That fucking hurt. Like, that really hurt. Like, because Australia had a really similar situation. Was it Edgbaston in 05 where, like, the last wickets came down and, like, you know, Kasperwitz and given out off the glove and all that kind of stuff and so close to winning. And this was England's equivalent. But they've just got a guy who, as you say, Dave, industry term, he's just had a day out. He got out of the house. He's out and about and he's just had a day out. And, like... We don't have an agenda for this. I think it's going to be a meandering conversation about how we process this, as you rightly say, Edo's, you know, as a nation, how we process this. Probably just sweep it aside and just focus on Old Trafford. And that'll be just a, you know, this podcast one, they'll just be looking forward and never looking back, never looking back ever. Certainly not an anger, as Oasis said. But like, just on the Stokes stuff, I've seen a couple of takeaways, lads. I'll put this both to you. And Tim Payne was questioned multiple times in his press conference after the game. It's like, what were your thoughts? What were you thinking with the field setting? Yeah, why did you push the fielders back? And this to me highlights like how fucking little even people who work professionally on the cricket know about the cricket. What do they want? Do they want like to have like four slips in a gully catching cover for Stokes?
Yeah.
He hit 70, his last 70 runs came off 40 balls. He's hit 8 sixes. He's switch hitting Nathan Lyon over point when there's a deep point, taking on a man on the boundary. Like, like you cannot stop that. I mean, Australia served their chances, but you could not stop the absolute whirlwind, the day out that was Ben Stokes' big day out.
Yeah.
Big day out.
Yeah, it was a big day out. Red Hot Chili Peppers were playing. But, yeah, mate, here goes. You're right. And I think everything has to be caveated with the greatness of what Stokes did. You know, people as kind of, you know, a septuagenarian like Jeffrey Boycott, he might even be an octogenarian, is saying that it's the best innings he's ever seen. There are people who've seen a lot of innings out there saying that, and people who know not to jump the gun on this stuff saying that it is... the greatest. Some saying one of the greatest. Some saying the greatest. Some saying it exceeds Headingley. You know, it was an absolute phenomenon. No one on the planet could do what Stokes did last night, and very arguably, no one on the planet previous to him could have ever done what he did. It was truly phenomenal. But let's point fingers and let's just roll around in the mud of where Australia could have won it. I agree. They were most likely to take a wicket on the boundary. It was silly to talk about where fielders should have been, though I don't think Payne's captaincy should sort of avoid scrutiny. I do think there were some strange bowling changes. I do think Nathan Lyon was underbowled a little bit. But, you know, in the broader scheme of things, when you're talking about the greatest innings of all time, it feels a little bit crass to start nitpicking at the details because the greatness kind of overwhelmed all of it.
I would say that... Kusal Pereira hit 153 not out against Dale Steyn and the rest of South Africa and tuck in South Africa. He basically did the same thing as Stokes did about 6 months ago when Schleicher won that series. So it is comparable, but like there is something quite remarkable about how low scoring a game this was. You know, like England got bowled out for 67, which is going to be forgotten. And they've chased down 370, which almost never happens in Test match cricket. And it's all because one guy has just been it's just been amazing. So
that's part of what hurts a little bit as well. He goes, you know, that 67 is now erased.
Yep.
They've erased it. And I guess there's the opportunity for Australia to have the last laugh in the series because there's still two more tests that is a saving grace. But, like, you're so right to call out the hurt that comes from it. Like, you know, it's not a car crash or anything, but, like, watching your team lose over 5 hours, you know, on the final days, truly excruciating. And I have to say, like, I really appreciate the wisdom of some of the senior cricket writers out there who are very quick to remind us that this is wonderful for the game of Test cricket, which is under threat.
Well, it's to
lord the game. But I don't know about you guys, but, like, it's part of me that just slightly doesn't trust people who can't just fucking grieve in the first place. Like, just be a little bit pissed off for your team because you clearly got into the game supporting a nation. And then we can say what a wonderful phenomenon this extremely strange code is. Yes, we all know that. But, geez, like, just the body's still warm, you know? Like, before, let's just not... Like, we don't have to eulogise straight away. We know it's really fucking good shit. It's good gear, even though Australia hasn't won a match by a wicket or under 10 runs since 1952. It's lost 9 by that many, but it's 1-0. Australia are the villains and they lose these games. They have to be the villain. One day our time will come.
I mean, the only way I can process this is by logging onto my Twitter app and scrolling through. And because we obviously share this Grey Cricketer account, whatever the fuck it is, we're obviously privy to the same content. Fuck me. Like, there has been a lot of overwrought emotional reactions from mainly English. I mean, I get that this is a huge... What a summer they've had. The World Cup, firstly, that happened. You know, this beautiful day out it was in the sunshine where cricket was revitalised and, you know, and it's fucking happened again. Like, I can't believe that it's happened again twice for these fucking cucks. Like, some of the stuff that's been written on Twitter. And if you go to Twitter and you type hashtag ashes, hashtag tears, like, there are so many grown men talking about what this has done to them emotionally. I'm just going through a few now. Mike Selvey, obviously a well-known man and a great cricket name of England. I do not believe what I've just seen. I am literally in tears. The greatest match-winning innings I've ever seen, just astonishing. Graham Swan, I have no sister, but if I did, I'd want her to marry Ben Stokes. It's weird how cricketers always want to marry off their sisters. Justin Langer did that as well. There's a fucking lot of this stuff. Like, England is just absolutely losing their shit over this. It's just people are literally in tears. They're losing bodily fluids over this. It's just brought a nation down.
We spoke at length about this is supposed to be England's summer, and fuck, it's just happening. And I was kind of thinking this morning as I woke up, still in disbelief of the thing that had happened, and I'm kind of thinking, like, do we just give up? Like, is everything just, are we just being Stokes'd? You know, like, Flint off 05, now Australia's going to search for Stokes 19 for the next 30 years, so we're about to find him. Unless he's in New Zealand. anyway, but so, like, I'm just kind of thinking, like, you know, you think about the Dharma Seema, the overthrows, you know, the drop catches, Trent Bolt, you know, Mark Harris dropping, it's like the Joel Wilson OBW, the reviews, all that. It's just fucking, the stars, isn't it? Isn't it in the stars? Can we just give up?
It is in the stars, mate, because you know, this is the climate change year of cricket, and it's breeding wild results, and that's reflecting the precarious nature of the environment. Everything is extreme. Like, everything you just mentioned there is an extremity, and fucking, you know, this is all happening against the backdrop of, you know, the Amazon burning down under the corrupt Bolsonaro regime. I mean, England were rolled for 67 in their first dig. That should have been it to come back from there and then post the highest or whatever, like the highest ever run chase in decades that England's performed. In the fashion they did, Stokes hitting 70-odd from the last 40 or whatever. This is extreme cricket. Everything is binary. Like, this is not normal test cricket that we grew up with, you know. We grew up with 300-plus first-inning totals and matches that went 5 days. And, you know, now we have fucking rain-interrupted matches that go for 3 days yet yield the wildest of results. This is
era. It's sort of strange, like, exhibition test cricket. So I think everybody agrees that from the first ball of this series that there was some – there's some sense of a classic on offer. There's still two more tests of this. But – what you can't say is that we're watching two powerhouses. Like, this game was in many ways was who could be least worst, and then Stokes set himself apart. Before that point, it was quite difficult to follow. You know, I did know somebody today said, "I'll spare a thought for the odds makers." Oh yeah, deepest fucking sympathies for those guys.
Very difficult for them.
But it is kind of true. Like, it's a bit of a marker for, like, how much this has kind of swayed. We can't make sense of it. But, like, I'm willing, you know, in the Netflix era, in the climate change era, you know, in the bite-sized communication era, just for it to have these wild oscillations. But, you know, I guess the only saving grace from an Australian perspective is that Steve Smith's coming back. And, you know, just once again to underscore anyone who's listening and saying you're focusing too much on Australia, Ben Stokes is God. He was amazing. And he sets himself apart. What a player. We haven't even talked about his, you know, 12-over spell before. He actually was like a kid in the backyard saying, okay, I'm going to go and win the game now. He just went and did it.
I think that's as well kind of the prism of, like, you know, in football, in terms when, like, your team concedes a goal and you go fucking shit defence, but if your team scores a goal, oh, they're the best players. Unbelievable. Couldn't stop. They couldn't do anything about that. And that's kind of what Stokes has done to Australia a little bit. I think, like, Australia had every right to lose this game so easily. You go back to day one, they got put into bat In awful conditions, and I think in years gone by, Australia gets rolled for fucking 70 there. You know, we've seen that happen before, and Australia's done, I thought, did pretty well to get 180, absolutely rocked England to bomb that for 67, make enough runs realistically. I mean, Australia should have won the game by 100 runs, really. I mean, I think I think the listeners will probably want us to talk about couple of things: the Nathan Lyon drop catch run out, and the Joel Wilson LBW. Does anyone have any take on that? I mean, Joel Wilson to me is like, the Ashes is the biggest series in world cricket. It's every single nation wants to be part of the Ashes because it's the most engaging, has the most interest, most viewer numbers, all that stuff. And like, how a guy can be umpiring who got like 15. Incorrect decisions wrong in the first test match and is still umpiring. And then, you know, sure, Payne shouldn't have burnt the review an over before or a few balls before or whatever, but like, you watch that LBW live and it, fuck me, that is hitting all three every single day of the week. Like, to get that wrong is, you know, I am saying this through my salty, crying tears, England fans out there, but that is a really bad decision. But that's why the DRS exists. It's not used for strategic plays. It's there to overturn the howlers, and that is an absolute howler.
Lyon's reaction to that was hilarious.
Fell over.
He did like some backwards somersault, just writhing on the ground in agony. Mm. Like, it just destroyed our heart and soul, that decision.
Yeah, that was the game.
The umpire, he just fucking cucked us.
I mean, the ball previous, he obviously had inexplicably fumbled a ball that didn't seem to like hurry onto him in what can only be described as like snatching. And the pressure getting to him. You got to say, good comeback following that delivery from him. But like, I where were you when it happens? Like, I remember just with 10 runs to get, like, I was sat prone on my couch, like my head in my hands, like just watching it, thinking, I can't believe this happening. You know, heart beating quickly, just pure adrenaline, and then. Like, I blacked out when he hit that back pad, and next thing I know, I was a centimetre from the screen yelling, that's out.
Me too.
I've just stood up, walked around this table in front of me saying, that's out. Son and wife asleep. Wife quite sick, actually, at the moment. And then kind of like eat that weird yell through gritted teeth, trying to stay quiet, going, fuck
yeah,
it
out.
Enjoy it, England fans. genuinely enjoy it. And then, when the review comes up, hilarious. And like, you could see there's a great kind of conversation going on at the moment about the class with which Australia has accepted this defeat. And you kind of, when you compare it to previous Australian teams, they're fucking royal family, you know. But I watched Tim Payne like walk down the pitch, and like, he just growled at Joel Wilson. He's like, what was that missing? He wasn't even looking at him. He was just looking at the ground. What was that missing? What was that missing? And just kept going. He has been, you know, magnanimous since then. But let's talk about that burnt review firstly, and try and be a little bit forensic about it. Right. So the way I saw it with 8 runs to go was Australia were completely mesmerized by this Ben Stokes horror show or wonder show, and they had already conceded in many ways that they were powerless now. Yep. Stokes is just hitting this where he wants, and the best we can do is put 11,000 fielders on the boundary and hope that one hits the outside half of the bat and we catch it just inside the rope. Yep. That was pretty much it. Yep. Slower ball, whatever, I don't really care. Yep. And that was pretty much it. And then when, you know, Cummins hit that pad, like, I mean, so many things gave it away. Firstly, the ball almost trickles down to fine leg. Yeah. I mean, you can always tell where the ball goes. Secondly, there's footage of Stokes at the non-striker's end later. He didn't even bother. Once it hit the pad, he was just on his haunch. He's like, oh, cool, that's not out. Mm. And then Australia used that review because... And I had to say this, like, but they think the game's gone.
Yeah.
So it was very much like, well, it may as well. How can I improve my chances from zero? You know, like, that was it. Mm. And that was a function of what Stokes had done to them. Like, Stokes created that in them. You know, it's not, that is part of the power of what he did.
Yeah. I heard Payne after in the press conference, he was saying that Cummins apparently came down the wicket and said that he definitely pitched in line, but I think he might have hit it. And Payne said he definitely didn't hit it, but I think he might have pitched outside leg. So there's obviously a lot of confusion going on there generally.
But just in real time, that ball just looked so – that just did not look anywhere near the stumps.
No, it's desperation.
It's extraordinary that Cummins thinks that.
Yeah.
I did notice that he's – he did appeal like slightly vociferously. Like he did, I saw him go up, and like for like an infinitesimal second, I was like, well, have I missed something there? And then that conversation is, I mean, that, yeah, it's so easy in retrospect. It's obviously so easy. And I'm sure that they decided to review that just because, well, let's multiply out, you know, let's improve our chances, which are currently zero, of winning.
Yeah.
But God, you know, like, you're like, yeah, how?
Yeah.
It's
funny because in the presser afterwards, again with Payne, he was asked about Joe Wilson's umpiring ability. And he asked about the LBW, and Payne like stopped the question midway through, and he said, "I know what you're going to ask me. I haven't seen it back, but I don't need to see it back. I know it was out. I know it was out." Like so, Pez, as you know, I was texting you last night. I had had about 55 bottles of wine last night. Had a friend over, just watching the Ashes, and nothing will end the relationship quicker than seeing a man head in his hands a centimetre away from the screen, appealing, "That's out. That's fucking out." So, you know,
were you nude?
Completely normal stuff. Nude, yeah, nude. Nude bottle of rosé, and that's the end of that. So let's look forward now to Old Trafford. We'll have a preview in the next couple of days before the Manchester test starts. We're talking about last podcast, we're saying that Khawaja's probably paying for his spot. I think would it be fair to say that Khawaja out, Labuschagne and Smith, it's about 3 and 4. Would that be fair?
What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, look, I think so. Before. I mean, where does he bat, 3 or 4? I mean, he's proven himself at 3, hasn't he?
Labuschagne. Labuschagne.
He has to bat 3, I think. You've got to move Khawaja to open. I think, I don't know. Okay. I mean, that would be my move. He's got a lot of class, Khawaja, and I don't think you can leave him out.
I agree with that. You know, at the end of the day, it's Harris versus Khawaja.
Mm-hmm.
I think Lang has shown with the like axing of Bancroft after 2 tests that like he's making selections not for the future, for the present. Mm-hmm. You know, like this Everest that Australia are trying to scale is, you know, something that they will not have the chance to do very often, as we've seen from previous tours. So this is about now. So it is a cold decision between Marcus Harrison, Usman Khawaja. I guess there's an argument that Wade could come into the question and someone could go, you know, maybe head shifts down to 6 or something. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's Harris versus Khawaja. If you just ask me with 2 tests on the line, who's more likely to score runs, I'm probably still going to stick with class. I still think that Khawaja might be a chance of pulling it off. He's had a few unlucky dismissals. I don't think that it's a sufficient reason to keep Harris because he deserves another go. Just in this situation, I just think there's 2 tests left. There's 4 innings left. Who's more likely to win your game is Khawaja. Sorry, Marcus. You're going to feature this summer and beyond, but I'll just stick with Uzi.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, Pez, because, I mean, like what sort of history do we have of Khawaja scoring runs in England? You know, four touring series in England, 150. I think you are right. It is Harris versus Khawaja. But for me, I think I would say Harris at the moment is probably more likely. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we'll obviously get a little bit closer down the line before the next test match starts. But you have to say a Smith injection would be huge, if true. But then also Jimmy Anderson looks like he might be some way coming back to being fit
as well.
It's
good to see that Davey Warner's back, though. Here goes. Mm-hmm. And he shaved his beard off and he hit runs. And that's just a great move, I think. I mean, that's exactly what I do when I'm feeling shit. I just try to change my appearance. He would have felt clean and new upon doing that. The same beard worked in the World Cup, but, you know, a few failures and now it's the beard's fault. So it has to be something's fault always. But it was good to see him hit some runs and take some catches, some fucking good catches
fucking
that he got
catches,
fired
man.
Up about.
Yeah. I think in a lot of ways it was actually Warner's test match. I think that's kind of the big takeaway that people aren't talking about, I think.
Yeah, Warner's test match, Hazelwood 9-5. I mean, that's what I saw on the CA highlights.
State media.
All right, well, we're going to get Tim Bresnan on the line, Leeds local, Headingley local, to laugh at us, basically. I suspect this is what's going to happen over the next few minutes or so. Then after that, hashtag AskTGC.
Just before that, here goes. Oh, yeah. We are going to speak with Dean Wilson.
We are going to speak to Dean Wilson, you're right.
From the Daily Mirror, just for an English voice to tell us just how wonderful it is to be English today.
All right, that's all coming up.
Harry Broad, good morning. You've been reading The Great Cricketer.
But most of the book has taken up with proving he isn't good enough. Locker room language is rife and sexual immaturity is rampant. Having sexual relations is called burgling a chop. I'm very disappointed. I thought this should be a great book.
Okay, the following man that we are going to speak to is making his debut on the Grey Cricketer podcast. I've been kind enough to have some dealings with him while I was living in the UK. He's sort of, one of the lead men of the UK cricket press pack. You can see him storming about in the press box, people following behind him. He's been on the beat for quite a long time. He's the Daily Mirror's cricket correspondent. His name's Dean Wilson. Dean, welcome to the Grey Cricketer.
Hello, guys. Nice to be on. Finally, I've earned my spurs.
Well, it's a great free hit for you today, Dean. it's a wonderful cast that you've waited patiently to join. Your piece overnight said that yesterday's result was the most thrilling, most miraculous performance from an English cricketer, referring to Ben Stokes, in case you didn't know, in 142 years of Test cricket. Do you want to take it away from there? You're at Headingley. What did you see?
Well, first of all, when I woke up this morning, I just had to make sure it wasn't a dream because it was that incredible. I think the reason why I say it was the greatest performance out of 142 years, it was not just because of the performance, which was amazing, but because, as you guys also know, we did win a small matter of a World Cup just 6 weeks ago. And in that final, the same man, Ben Stokes, was absolutely heroic and almost kind of carrying the weight of the nation on his shoulders. And somehow this backbreaking work that he's been doing over the last 6 weeks hasn't cowed him, bowed him or bent him in any way. He's still like Atlas, just as strong as ever. And what he did at Headingley was nothing short of miraculous. Not to mention the fact, of course, that he'd also turned in about 25 overs of wholehearted, lung-bursting fast bowling. Had a couple of catches dropped off his bowling, which might have sent one or two guys insane. But he just keeps going, keeps coming back for more. And I can tell you, Ben Stokes is our columnist at the Mirror, and so I've been dealing with him quite closely over the last little while. And I can tell you, I can promise you, when he says there is nothing that gets him going more than beating Australia, I promise you that is absolutely the case. He's got the double whammy. He's English on one side, New Zealand on the other. And so right in the middle of that hatred is your beautiful country. And it couldn't have been a finer moment for him to really produce. He missed the chance to do it against Australia in the final, but he got hold of you guys yesterday, that's for sure.
Sorry, Ben.
I was going to say, Dean, one thing that we're obsessed about, as Australians is, what's he like as a man, and that's just like one thing that we're obsessed about is, just analysing cricketers' personalities. And one thing that seems to come across consistently, particularly with people from the UK and his teammates especially, is that he seems extremely popular within the group. And obviously he's had his troubles off the field and all that stuff, but I've never heard anyone who's played with or against him say a bad word about him. I mean, you've just said there that you've worked quite closely with him at the Mirror. What's he like as a person?
Well, I think obviously for your listeners, the word alpha is quite a strong one. And clearly, he is an alpha kind of character, leads by example, leads from the front, all those sorts of things. I can remember when he first came into the England set up, kind of 23-ish years old, I think it was in 13, a young player, inexperienced, but obviously showed what he could do in Perth. And talking to some of the kind of coaches around him at that time and their astonishment at just how much others wanted, not just to be like him, but, to follow him, on and off the field. Everyone would be waiting for this 24-year-old kid to come out of his room and come down to the bar, and it was all like, right, where are we going tonight, boys? What are we doing tonight? Oh, let's wait until Stokesy gets down here. Let's find out what he's up to. Yeah. And he is just a very charismatic kind of character. And I think that the reason that he is that way, or the players kind of see him that way, is partly to do with what Joe Root talked about yesterday after the game, that he's the ultimate team man. He wants to see other people happy. Obviously, nothing makes him happier than performing and doing well, but he really likes to see other people happy. And so whether it's teammates on the field that he can affect the game, to bring about team success, or whether it's going out for a couple of drinks with, his old mates from home, his old cricket club, getting a round of drinks and, making sure that everyone is kind of looked after. He's that kind of almost kind of caring soul. I know people might find that difficult to believe because he's, he's certainly got a bit of toughness about him, a bit rough and ready as well. But actually, I think there's a bit of warmth, a bit of sensitivity there. He cares about others. He's fiercely loyal. He's been good as gold to work with, certainly from my point of view. And when I've been out with him on occasions, that generosity kind of shines through. He is good fun. He's not going to wow you with his IQ and take you down the Mensa route, but he's streetwise. he understands that he's got a good sense of humour. He's a good guy. He is a good guy, and I think that he's also matured. I'm not going to come up there and say that he's the Messiah and has never done anything wrong, because I think we all know that he's made mistakes.
Sure.
But he he's a young man who's now maturing into a fine man, into a obviously a fantastic cricketer, but off the field as well. Father of two. Learned, I think, from his mistakes, and is trying to be the best that he can be. And I've met his mum and dad as well. Deb and Jed Stokes over in New Zealand. I've spent a bit of time with Jed and his brother in India while he was at the Rajasthan Royals. And they're good people. Pretty salt of the earth and honest, yeah, and hardworking and all those kind of qualities. And you can kind of see them in Ben, and it just so happens that he's really good at cricket as well.
Dean, as Australia kind of rolls around in the mud of finger pointing and blame games and the one that got away, etc., there's also some videos doing the rounds of fans at Premier League matches in the pub, for example, cheering on the final boundary from Stokes to win the game. There's always so much chat about the place of cricket in England, where it used to be, where it is now. I mean, can you give us a sense of how the news of England's win landed in England? I mean, is it cover to cover? Has it brought the country to a standstill? Or, was Newcastle's win over Tottenham still pride of place?
Well, actually, if you ask my colleague at the Daily Mail, Paul Newman, the most diehard Tottenham fan of all time, there was a tinge of sadness as he left Headingley because of Tottenham's result. but thankfully, managed to perk him up. Look, I think in England, there's always a lot of hammering about where cricket sits. Those of us within the game, obviously think it's the greatest game of all time and can't understand why anyone wouldn't see it the same way. But the fact is that cricket is not as ever-present as it once was because of a move to pay TV and the fact that it hasn't been as kind of ubiquitous in the public domain as it used to be. There are lots of reasons. I'm not going to get into the kind of the whys and wherefores of that, because I think Sky do a terrific job. However, certainly this summer, I think the move to put the World Cup final on Channel 4 on terrestrial TV was a brilliant move and a very generous one by Sky. I think that's really helped. I think people who were kind of clicked on to cricket through that have kind of followed through now. And the conversation's definitely louder now than it was around the final. I had a lovely moment actually after the game yesterday when everyone's doing their interviews by the side of the pitch, and Stokes came over and had a quick chat with him, and then I kind of heard this Dino shout from the crowd, and one of my old friends was there and trying to weave his way around. He said, Dino, this is my son, Will. I've brought him along. This is his first day of Test cricket ever. And I just said, you fool, how did you bring him along to this? You know this doesn't happen all the time. I said, Will, listen, trust me, you probably had a great day, but there's going to be some pain to come. So, you know, enjoy it while it lasts. But this does not happen all the time. But look, I think people are taking, you know, their kids to cricket as much as they can. There's so much cricket available. There's, you know, T20 still going on. You know, obviously the international game is front and centre, but you've got your Big Bash League. We've got the Vitality Blast, and that's still going on at the moment, and they're getting record numbers as well, getting sellouts. So the cricket's definitely on the up. You know, it's great to be involved. It's great to be able to spread the word and all the rest of it, but like anything, you can't sort of rest and think that the job's done. You've just got to keep persuading people that this is a great game, that, you know, there's something there for everyone. Doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, creed, colour, all the rest of it, there is something in this game. And Ben Stokes really, you know, epitomised it with his four-eyed specky friend at the other end.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about Jack Leach, actually, because, I mean, he's going to pick up some sort of cult status, I'm sure. But I've seen a couple of photos going around on Twitter, especially guys in the press box, noticing that after the day's play, Leach took the team back out to the square, and he was reenacting his single to tie the scores, which I just think is bloody great chat from him. But what he did, you know, one off 17 balls, I mean, you can't really put that in perspective from a guy who averages something like six in first-class cricket or something like that. I don't know if he's got 90 against Ireland the other day, but he seems like a really, really friendly guy, and he's done fantastically well, hasn't he, Jack Leach?
Yeah, absolutely. Definite cult status. You know, and he's loving it. He obviously, he's really enjoying it. But, you know, you don't get to be that loved if you don't, you know, produce something, you know, worthy of it. And like you say, you've got that 92 against Ireland, which, you know, kind of helped England out of a bit of a spot. And then, you know, he got the greatest one not out, you know, in the history of English cricket. And, you know, I remember Jack Leach, you know, first, you know, bursting onto the scene, taking lots of wickets down in Taunton on pretty helpful surfaces. And he just looked like, you know, an absolute perfect finger spinning, you know, first class cricketer, nothing too dramatic about it. And then he had to go through this really quite horrendous remedial work on his action. Apparently, you know, his arm was not absolutely perfectly straight. You know, how the biomechanics worked on that to suggest that it was anything other than straight is beyond me. But, you know, he had to go through that process himself. It meant that he couldn't play for England earlier than he eventually did. So when he came back, you know, he'd already been through a little bit of trial and tribulation. And I can remember speaking to him in New Zealand just before his debut on the last tour out there, and him really speaking so confidently and candidly and really quite warmly about, you know, those sort of cliches, what doesn't knock you down makes you stronger, and, you know, I've learned from this and so on and so forth. And I thought then, you know, gosh, this guy, you know, he certainly talks a great game. I hope that he can play a great game as well, because you like to see, you know, good people do well. And since then, you know, he bowled pretty well in New Zealand, showed that he could live at test level. He's still kind of learning his trade as a bowler at that level, but he's managing to contribute. And when you can do something like Jack did with scoring one not out, it's not his main suit. You know, he's already part of the team. He's already loved by the team. And, you know, not everyone would be able to go out there and reenact their single down to square leg or whatever. So I'm really pleased for him. I just now looking forward to seeing him use that confidence and improve and progress as a bowler and really give England that stable spin presence that Moeen Ali did for a time, absolutely. But when you've got the pace bowling options of Jofra Archer, Ben Stokes, James Anderson, Stuart Broad, if you've got a reliable spinner like a Jack Leach who can hold up an end and get the crowd chanting his name, then that's a great thing, and I'm all for it.
Dean, thank you for taking us into the hearts and minds of England cricket. I'm a little bit surprised you haven't taken the opportunity to take a swipe at Australia. Would you like that opportunity now?
Well, look, to be fair, you know, the thing about us English types, you know, we're very reserved, we're very humble, we don't like to brag. You know, we like to let our performances and let what goes on the field do the talking. Yeah, stick it up, yeah.
Well done. Well, I asked for it. Dean Wilson, the cricket correspondent for the Daily Mirror. Thanks very much for joining us, mate.
Cheers, guys. Thanks.
Look, to be honest, I don't try and take the piss too much, but the problem is you start to get a little bit bored. So I try and do the right thing by the competition, I must admit. Wow. When I go there, I try and play conventionally, but realistically, I'm thinking from ball one, I just want to park this fucking thing into the car park. But you don't want to come out of it and people say, look at that arsehole Hodgie, you know. So, yeah, what a prick. But, yeah, I mean, it's good fun.
Time to talk about Budgie Smuggler. We like to think that we're associated with players. We get a few people on the podcast. I should say we made some more entreaties to both the ECB and Cricket Australia after this game, especially to the ECB. We once again asked for Johnny Bairstow, told he had other commitments. But we're told it will happen. One organisation who is far closer to the players than we are is Budgie Smuggler. Did you know, gentlemen, that Ben Stokes smuggles?
He smuggles.
Unbelievable
with the Budgie
stuff.
In fact, I'm not sure about last night's ton. I can't guarantee with last ton, but his previous ton in the previous test, he was doing that smuggling.
Yep.
You know who else scores tons on the other team?
Who's that?
Steve Smith. You know what else he does? He smuggles.
Does he?
Yeah.
So there's a direct correlation between test match hundreds and smuggling. So if you smuggle, you can hit 100 in a test match? Is that what we're saying to the customers out there?
That's the advertising angle we are pursuing here. If you get Budgie Smugglers, you too can score 100 in a test match. I mean, that's essentially advertising, isn't it? It's like if you have this product like this person does, who looks like they get sex, you too will get
that's
sex.
That's advertising.
And there's just so many like gaps there, but that's the advertising we're doing. Hopefully you too feel like you can score hundreds in test matches or whatever 100 means to you. Others are on TV saying life is your greatest century or should be. Just think about hundreds and Budgie Smugglers and Ben Stokes and Steve Smith. You can actually get some smugglers if you get some before Australian Father's Day, which is on September 1st, before 2 p.m. on this Thursday. There's a voucher you know, it's a potential gift idea. You can see that this advertising is going extremely well.
Huge if true. I like it, Pez. Everyone's smuggling. All the greats. All the greats.
BudgieSmuggler.com.au. Okay, here we go. I've been looking forward to this. Sort of. This man represented his country 142 times across all formats, 23 tests, high score of 91, averaged 26 with the bat. It's obviously now 30-odd, 350s. With the ball, he took 72 wickets, best of 5 for 48. 85 ODIs, he managed 109 wickets. His best there was also 5 for 48. What about his first-class record? 195 matches with Yorkshire, 6,500 runs, a high score of 169 not out, 548 wickets with a best of 5 for 28. He was part of the team that destroyed Australia away from home. He's one of Yorkshire's favourite sons. Wikipedia says his name is Brez Big Time or Brezzy Lad. It's Tim Bresnan. Welcome to the Grade Cricketer.
Good morning, boys.
It is a good morning for you, I suspect. I'm informed that you didn't circuit Brezzy with the English side last night, though they were in your hometown. What was your experience of this game yesterday?
Well, we were actually away at Nottingham playing our own T20 game, and there was not much happening in the game. They were just knocking it round at this particular point. The ball was at the top of his mark. And the loudest cheer I've ever heard for a bloke who's thrown the ball from mid-wicket back to the bowler. Everyone's like, what's going on? What is happening? Anyway, ball's the next ball. Turns out Ben Stokes is at a 6. England now needs, like, whatever, 2 to win or something. Mm. And then another cheer when Leachy gets his single. And then the loudest roar you've ever heard for a game that was, you know, 103 miles away or something.
So how'd you go in the game?
In fact, it scared one of our young lads. He'd only played a couple of games. He had to go off with heat stroke.
in a T20.
In a T20, yeah. It was warm. But I reckon it was the cheer out of the stands that scared him. He's like, I'm on for this.
So you've caught
so
up.
How have you been, lads, anyway? How have you been?
Yeah, no, okay, cool. You interview us.
Catch up.
Yeah, no, been good, mate. Thanks, yeah, obviously.
Real good, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing
real good.
And how are you feeling this morning?
I've just been burying myself in work. So I went to work and just really...
Emails.
Yeah.
Emails, cold calls, anything I could do to just get out of the headspace. But here we are again and I'm talking to you. And I'm triggered.
I'm not going to let you forget it.
I actually didn't catch the game last night, so I actually don't know what happens, but it seems like everyone had a nice time and, you know, roll on Old Trafford, really. So it's kind of the gist of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need therapy, Rez. We need a team of doctors to work with us, each of us, each individual, and because we've had psychological trauma inflicted upon us. I mean, is this, if you were us, how would you be feeling? I mean, let's just say you didn't play, you know, 100 and whatever it is matches for your country, but you're just a normal punter who likes cricket and you've stayed up all night to watch your boys play in the Ashes and you've just been absolutely worldied by
like yourself,
the opposition
Dave.
Legend.
Yeah.
How would you feel? How should we feel?
I think what I'd do is, as a matter of urgency, I'd set up a care centre for Australia. I'd call it the Joel Wilson Institute. Just for anyone.
Institute.
Well, you just talk through your problems, you know.
Mm-hmm. Not a hotline as well. It's got to be face to face.
Face to face is always the best, isn't it? But I suppose you could have a hotline for people that are really struggling.
Rez, you must have sent out a couple of texts to, I mean, you'd be friends with some of the guys in the team. Obviously, they wouldn't speak to you anymore because, you know, why would they? But, you know, you must have sent a couple of texts out to the boys. Any feedback? Like, how was their night out last night?
I've not had any feedback yet. Like you said, they won't text me back. So I'll just get blue ticks back, mate.
It's kind of like when we were writing to you before these shows that we did with you as well. Just
everyone's
one big scene.
Yeah.
Couple of scenes.
Yeah, that's how I get back. I imagine they went. I've seen a few videos of the lads celebrating in the dressing room. It looked fairly subdued, to be fair.
Mm.
You know, I think they're still. Obviously, they know that they've still got a job to do.
Well, I think obviously, basically all of them failed in the game, so they would have preferred personal success over a win. That's obviously how it goes in cricket. Matt, you obviously played at Henley a lot, and that wicket seemed kind of funny because, it's the same before the game as you look up before you look down at Henley, and, you know, it obviously seemed around the first couple of days, and then it spun a little bit as well. But then by day four, it actually seemed to be playing better. I mean, is that your experience as well at Henley? That sort of gets better as the wicket goes on?
Yeah, massively. It's also a new ball wicket as well, so no matter what time or what the weather's like, as long as you've got a new ball in your hand, you're going to get something out of it. You know, the overhead conditions play a massive part, even bigger than the, you know, whether it's damp or, you know, slightly dry or whatever. Just if it is true, look up, not down. If you've got cloud cover, you're going to get team swing, you know, maybe a bit of uneven bounce, but you know, when the sun's out, it seems to just flatten out quite a bit.
Yeah, how do you think that the Australians bowled? I mean, heads must roll, obviously, we must point fingers and begin the blame game. But if you just were asked to review how the Australians bowled against England, where did they kind of get it wrong?
I think the second new ball. You know, that first. You know, when Johnny and Stokes, who were in, as soon as they took the second new ball, they just weren't accurate enough. That's the time when, you know, they could have put that match to bed and, you know, just blown us away. But, you know, they bowled wide. They 30 extras as well. Like, and that wasn't even... That was before we went out to field. in our game. Like, there was 30 extras on the board. We're like, Jesus, he's a decent player, that extras bloke.
You still have those kind of cricket jokes at the top level?
Yeah, we do, yeah. You know. It's like, I saw one of your tweets this morning. It's like, the geezer after Ben Stokes got 100 who showers. That again.
Yeah. Yeah. It always plays well.
Muscle memory, you have to do it. It doesn't matter what the state of the game is.
Yeah.
Can you,
you know what I like as well? You know what I like? I like the fielders when he's running towards the fence. You know, the ball's dipping over his head. Yeah. It signals to the umpire whether it was 4 or 6.
Yeah.
I still do that.
Yeah.
I still do that.
It's helpful. It's a nice thing to do.
Content.
Yeah.
Brezzy, can you tell us a little bit about Ben Stokes as well? I mean, obviously there's going to be 1,000 profiles of this bloke now, and everyone's talking about BBC Sports Personality of the Year. Like, that's something we don't understand in Australia. People are talking about Australia choking, right? I think part of that has to do with how much he demoralised them. You know, like, yeah. I mean, are you kind of surprised at all that he was able to pull that off? You know, such a huge feat.
Yeah, I think, and like, that would have to go down as the best test innings in history, wouldn't it? Surely.
Be up there.
I think, you know, Stokes is a bloke. He never gives up. I mean, the typified the man. You know, when the night before, when he bowls a 12 over spell or whatever it was, had it swinging around corners at, you know, pushing 88 miles an hour, like, well deep into his 12th over, and he's still, he busts the gut for the team, and that's what you want. That's the type of players that you want on your team. He's a bit of a hero, Ben Stokes. You know what? He's a proper solid guy as well, like a stand-up geezer.
Brezzy, you've obviously played in multiple Ashes series and, you know, winning and losing sides, but, like, how much do you think momentum actually plays a part in, you know, 5 tests, you know, sort of longer series that no one else seems to play anymore? It's just Australian and it seems to play these long series. But, like, do you think momentum and a swing such as this in this test match just gone, like, is actually really significant for the overall course of the series?
Yeah, I think England will win it now.
Really?
Momentum swing. There was a massive momentum swing as soon as Jofra Archer got involved at Lords.
Yeah.
And now it's happened again. You know, Archer bowled well. I don't know the state of his injury or what, if he's even injured. He might have just been cooked. But, you know, like, there's another momentum swing now. I reckon that the Aussies will be hurting, demoralised, like, thinking, what have we got to do with put this series to bed. I think England will walk away with it now, if I'm honest.
Interesting.
Well, I guess the one saving grace for Australia is that Steve Smith's coming back, and you've actually got a little bit of history with him. You played a season of Sydney grade cricket when you were 19 back in 2005-06, you know, from memory.
Yeah.
And that was Steve Smith's debut in first grade as well. What are your recollections of that? And I understand at the time he had some ambitions to go and play in England as well, and spoke to you about that.
Yeah, he did. He tried to sniff a gig at Yorkshire. His dad's obviously English, Peter. He was just a young kid, a bit spotty-faced, wet behind the ears. he came into the team and got a few runs, bowled a few leg spinners. But he played nicely. He looked all right. He looked on his game in order, he looked tidy. But it was, you know, when he asked me if I could get him a gig at Yorkshire, I was like, whoa. Slow down, bigger. You're not that good.
I fucking love you, Brisbane.
It's so obviously good. Obviously talent ID is not gonna be my future career, I don't think. But yeah, he's a decent kid as well, like, lovely lad.
Yeah.
And after that, the next time I saw him, he was twatting me all around Lords in a one-day international.
I think, didn't you say, when we talked about this in Leeds, he did ask if you would get him a gig at Yorkshire, and that he would, you know, maybe that would lead him down a road of perhaps being eligible for England, and you said no and just gave him some gloves, didn't you?
Yeah, it's just, I just undid the kit bag and go, mate, like, excess baggage, you just help yourself. I think he got nearly 3,000 runs the following year with one of my Slavengers. And then subsequently got picked for New South Wales. So I think, you know, one of my Slazenger V1200s can partly take, a bit of credit for his success. Or, even Australia's success over the last 12 months.
Yeah. Oh, we thank you for that, Bruce.
Thank you for doing that.
No worries. I didn't want to take it home. I couldn't afford the excess baggage. I had, like, too many didgeridoos and stuff in my bag. Souvenirs, boomerangs and shit.
Yeah. Thanks for propping up our economy.
Yeah. Let's just steer away from that slightly. What are your other memories of Sydney Grade Cricket? I guess it's the name of our cast. But what were your memories of playing there for 1 year?
I found it weird. You know why? I found it weird how a bunch of blokes, like, and every team was the same, could get together on a Saturday, abuse the shit out of each other for 6 hours, and, like, play cricket at a subpar standard, but at the same time rating themselves as world beaters. I found that really weird. And I found it really weird when I ever went into bat and I just got absolutely nailed with abuse, right? By even the bloke at the other end who I was batting with, you know, he was having a few digs at me, calling me a shit pom and stuff. Like, you guys thought you were the absolute bee's knees. Like, most of the lads who I was playing with in my grade team reckoned, a bit like Smithy, reckoned that Sydney Grade Cricket was like first-class cricket in England.
Yeah.
No, but I can tell by your sniggers, you actually believe that as well. So, yeah. Oh, you believe that at one time.
Yeah, you do. You always have to denigrate by comparison.
Yeah. It's probably slightly better. Slightly better than first-class.
Probably threes, maybe fours. Yeah. Counter cricket is maybe threes, fours.
Like, if you're a ones and twos player in Sydney, you're like, I could... Probably you guys would be like, oh, look, you probably go over and play minor counties and get, dollar a run or something, a pound a run, and have a good time. If you wanted to knuckle down, you probably play a bit of county cricket. But you're usually not there for that. You just want the circuit. And you've got to remember it's 05 as well, so Australia just have no regard for any other nation. Lots of things were happening at the time. You were at Sutherland, not far away from that. It was some riots. But then, things just went downhill for Australia culturally and cricketing-wise as well.
Yeah, I just reckon it's the arrogance of the place. Like, oh, it was the arrogance of the place. Obviously, you've been knocked down a peg or two now, haven't you? You both.
Us as a country.
Fucking hell, wins one test match. Jesus.
And a World Cup, mate. And a World Cup. No asterisk. No asterisk.
Did you really, though?
What do you lads reckon to, England's complete and utter dominance in cricket?
I saw actually a tweet the other day by Matt Prior, and he was almost laying the foundations for a loss. He said, he couldn't believe that there was a World Cup and the Ashes in 1 year, and must be so tough to have to back up, for an Ashes series after you've hosted a World Cup on your home soil, winning a tournament with your mates.
To be fair, I understood exactly what he was saying. And it wasn't an excuse for lads that were out there. We played back-to-back Ashes, remember?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And that was to avoid ever being part of a World Cup and an Ashes again in the future. Because it was too tough to do. So I can understand where he's coming from. Like, why did we have to do that back-to-back Ashes if, 3-4 years later, we're in the same situation where we've got a World Cup and an Ashes?
But it's the same for Australia. Also have to do it, except they have to do it out of, like, living out of suitcases for 3 months. A little bit harder, I would have thought.
Yeah.
I mean...
are you kidding me? 5-star hotels everywhere, around this beautiful island that we live on.
Right. Yeah, but then you got to put all the clothes back in your suitcase and move around again. Different hotel.
What about the being able to circuit and knowing who the hell you are?
Yeah. Because cricket is the ninth biggest sport.
Yeah, unless you're Steve Smith or Dave Warner, no one actually knows or would recognise you in England. So you could quite easily get out on the circuit without any fuss.
Mm. Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on with
the Nathan Lyon hate? I feel like England really like to get on Nathan Lyon's back, and I wonder what he's done. Is it the ending the careers comment thing of the last Ashes series? Like, I don't know, people really seem to be, thriving off his like missed run out, especially. Is he a bad guy? What's happening with Nathan Lyon?
I don't personally know, to be honest. Mm. I don't pay enough attention in the media. Like, I did a win that had said something about ending career.
Yeah,
it's a bit like the broken arms comment, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's like there's no point. There's no need for it.
Yeah.
Like, just play your cricket. You don't need to get so personal.
Yeah. Is it because he's an off-spinner, though? Like, should an off-spinner be able to make such aggressive proclamations? Because they just bowl these ones. They just use their ring finger and not their index finger, and they just tweak it. That's what they do.
Well, I suppose he's got to be aggressive in other ways, hasn't he? Yeah. Can't bowl bouncers. I don't know, mate. Like, I just think he's made chip shop comments in the media, and then he's bowled okay, but then it comes back and bites you, doesn't it? Like, you don't. There's a saying over here, I don't know if you have it in Australia, you never fuck with mother cricket. She always bites you on the ass.
Mm.
And I feel as though that's exactly what he's done. He's messed with mother cricket.
Jesus.
Tim, I don't think anyone has controlled the pace of an interview on this podcast quite like you. Probably the audience can probably tell that we've spent some time with you, some good time. We really appreciate it. I mean, given you were interviewing us, do you have any final words or questions for us before we end this conversation?
I've got a really lengthy throwdown for you.
Oh. Go on.
No, actually. But if I'd have been more prepared for your phone call, I might have written something down.
Maybe next time. That'd be good.
Three or four pages front and back.
Beautiful.
To read out to you and then completely and utterly stuff you with a question about fairy liquid or something on the end of it.
That's
the formula.
That's the formula. Appreciate you coming on at short notice and giving the Yorkshire English reaction to it. And it's all very fair because Australia got cucked. So hope you're well, mate. I'm just signing off an email now.
I've got a question for you. I've got a question for you. So it's obviously Higo and Pez. Where's the other bloke? Is he opening up the Joel? Is he opening up the Joel? What's his name?
The Joel Wilson Institute. He's setting
Joel
it up.
Joel Wilson Institute. Yeah. Is he out there setting it up, or is he out there looking for one?
He's good been question. On the show asking
I don't really
me
know
questions.
How to answer that. That's really, really painful. Well, I appreciate it. It's much appreciated.
Guys, I've really enjoyed myself this morning.
Great.
It's just 25 minutes, just four blokes having a chat.
Glad you have.
Yeah.
We'll do it again. Thanks, Brezzy.
No worries, boys. Enjoy the next test.
We'll do.
Try not to get too down. Like, it's just a game. It's just a game. It's not even the most popular sport in our country.
Okay. Thanks, Tim.
No worries.
Cheers, Chris.
It's Queensgrove Sports' massive birthday sale. All brands reduced to clear. Kookaburra, Grey Nichols, New Balance, GM and more. Everything's priced to make you think it's actually worth it. Need a new stick to kid yourself that you'll actually average above 11 this season? Don't waste your money on actual therapy. Try retail therapy instead. We've got last year's stock with this year's stickers and double the price. We've got the brands of yesteryear too. Remember MRF? Brian Lara used one, so that must mean you're good enough to use it too. Flintoff and KP used a woodworm. I'm pretty sure they went into receivership, so we're basically giving them away. Remember when Albion sponsored Chris Martin, the worst batsman of all time? I have no idea how these bizarre alien pads didn't sell out. We've got them! What about those weird Indian brands that look like railway sleepers, weigh the same, and have absolutely no middle? We've got you covered. We even sell bats with no stickers on them, so it looks like you're trying to get sponsored, even though you're in fifth grade. So rush into Queensgrove Sports today and make this season your last.
Hashtag AskTGC. Four of the best here, lads. Morris Lester writes in. He says, why is Jofra Archer wearing a timepiece when he's batting? What style of timepiece is acceptable to wear while batting, apart from none? Digital, analog, pocket, Fitbit, or calculator? Hashtag ICGC.
What style? So like, is he talking about what era of timepiece? Like a fob watch or some kind of old 1920s style piece might be very acceptable to wear while batting?
I think Johnny Bairstow was a Fitbit. When he bats, he was in the World Cup. I'm not sure if he's still doing it, but yeah. So Johnny's gone for the Fitbit. Archer's gone for like a serious, massive, like, yeah. It's like Kawaja, like yeah. I forget, like jewelry.
It's accessorizing.
It's accessorizing. Yeah.
Big, like a big face. It always has to be big, and it just pops out of the sleeve just so.
Yes,
It just hooks itself around the sleeve just so.
Just. I remember the first person I saw to wear a watch while playing was Craig McDermott, who wore the equivalent of like a Daniel Wellington when he came into bowl. And I remember like one of the commentators would have been a Laurie or a Benno maybe sort of asking why he was doing that because they've never played on the ground where like a clock wasn't available to be seen at the ground. And I was like, I don't really think he's doing it to know what time it is when he's playing in a test match. Craig McDermott was accessorising with a nice Daniel Wellington equivalent in 1993.
But you were, and as a what, seven. Sort of what, seven-year-old, he goes, even you were aware that what he was doing was accessorising for fashion purposes.
Yes, I clocked it, Pace.
I think as a seven, you clocked it, well done. As a seven-year-old, I would have just presumed that he was wearing a watch to read the time. I'm impressed that you're aware of a watch having that use at age seven.
Yeah.
Okay. Rob says, gents, this has been quite a year for me. My longtime partner is not so subtly signalling that our relationship is over. My father has stopped communicating with me entirely, and I spent my 40th birthday attending my favourite uncle's funeral. Hell of an opening.
Yep.
You might describe the year thus far as suboptimal. The one bright spot is that I started playing cricket. As an American living in England, I puzzled for months over the game before deciding the only way to understand the sport was to play it. Seeing an advert posted on a wall in a local pub, I turned up to the winter nets and immediately took to the sport emotionally, if not athletically. I fielded with more enthusiasm than elegance. I bowl like Jimmy Anderson in that I've already injured my calf multiple times. And my season high runs was ... two runs in three overs before being run out, knowingly sacrificing myself for better batsmen down the order. My next match was a golden duck off a Yorker just nabbing outside stump. Nevertheless, cricket has remained the high point of my 2019. So my question is, should I A, quit my job and throw myself into cricket here in England, hoping that the impending Brexit chaos will let me slip under the radar of Her Majesty's immigration enforcers when I overstay my visa, playing in developmental leagues with kids a third my age who can outplay and outsledge me, knowing my misery will always be welcome here in England? B, move to San Diego and take up with the SoCal Cricket League, hoping my girlfriend will fall in love with me again after seeing me energetically fielding my whites while ignoring my batting paralysis facing predominantly South Asian spin bowlers, maximising the flat dry wickets of eternally parched California? Or C, quit cricket, abandon what's left of my soul, move to DC, and seek work with the Trump administration, hoping my right-wing father will finally believe his fickle leftist know-it-all son has finally seen the light? This is all riding on you guys, so thanks in advance. Rob.
That's Hall of Fame for me. That is Hall of Fame.
I think that's really good.
Lots going on with Rob.
It's been a tough year for Rob, hasn't it?
Yeah, tough year for
really
Rob.
Really tough year.
Yeah, I went on his Twitter to make sure this was legit. And so, yeah, he's real. It's real. He's a real person.
Man.
So American in the star. I reckon Chase Love, man. Go back to San Diego, get your cricket. I reckon be big fish, small pond.
Surf down there, yeah.
Surf down there.
Doesn't make sense,
sun.
Though.
What do you
like,
mean?
He's saying that he's going to use cricket in Southern California.
Yeah.
To rekindle love, like everyone knows.
What's
that there
the issue,
is
mate?
No compatibility between playing the game of cricket and investing in a relationship.
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe things are different in California.
So is he moving to South San Diego with his girlfriend here?
I think she might already be there. I feel like.
Or they might move there.
Yeah.
They might sort of be from there.
Right. Okay. Now I understand.
Because at the beginning of, in the first stanza, my long term partner is not so subtly signaling that our relationship is over. Hmm. And. I mean, in this instance, I think in North American circles, cricket could be the thing to rekindle because cricket's kind of like a niche sport. Mm. You know, I guess it's kind of niche as well in England, but like, you know, there's something quaint about that, and maybe that might be the way to you know, reopen the heart vessels and let love in.
I like that he immediately took to the sport emotionally.
Yes,
I just wonder so what
if not athletes,
what that means.
Didn't we all
like just Mashkist.
Putting up the nets, you know, measuring a run up, you know, putting on those pads, you know, putting the box on, just connecting with the sport of cricket emotionally.
I like the idea of like he's a like I like the idea of him moving to DC to seek work with the Trump administration, mm-hmm. like not me, because like you can tell by Rob's writing that he has the ability to be able to adopt the other team, you know, being an American, go to England and playing cricket, he can go straight into the Trump administration, get his father's love. That's a, I mean, what is a bigger sacrifice for your life to gain your father's love? Playing cricket for 40 years, as we have done in one way or another, or joining the Trump administration for your father's love and foregoing all of your politics?
Short-term gain, short-term pain, long-term gain there, yeah, as opposed to all the way around with cricket. Interesting.
But you can join the global elite at least if you're in the Trump administration. You rub shoulders, you sort of have, you know, high-powered meetings and steakhouses and stuff. You can be safe in the global elite, you know, as the world kind of dies.
Because I was kind of thinking, like, with the Trump administration, I mean, maximum, you know, 4 years left for Trump or 5 years, I suppose. But then, like, you look what's happening in Italy, you know, you know, they're predicting that like the most right wing government's going to get in since World War II. So you know, maybe this is a trend that's happening worldwide. Brexit, obviously, famously. So, I still think B. I think you should move to San Diego. Rob is what I think.
Yeah, I'd move to DC and seek work with Trump. I think Trump is the future, and then you know he'll get in. Trump 2020,
without doubt.
Then 2024, you can shift back to the private sector and take on some kind of good job there. So
that's when you move back to England, I think, because maybe some people will go to jail after that. But for the next 4 years, all good. Yeah.
All right, we'll continue. David Mears says, when I shadow bat, I bat left-handed and get out to a rearing ball that I could do nothing about. I haven't played cricket in years and am right-handed. What's wrong with me? I assume this means I have some confusion over sexuality. How do I tell my wife?
How do I tell my wife?
Yeah, so, so he's come to terms with it immediately. Yeah. What's wrong with me? Probably a few things.
You know, hey, Dahl, you know how when I play my cricket shots, just to explain, when I do it like this, see how I'm holding my hand? That's actually what they call left-handed. I normally do it like this, but because I do it like this, I think I'm not the sexuality that you think I am.
Whoops.
How would someone who's non-binary shadow bat? That's the main question.
Not for me. That's not.
Okay.
Out of here.
Just leave the podcast.
Yeah, it pisses off. All right, Dave, just you and me go. Jamie Stevens. Afternoon, fellas. In the wake of Marnus Labuschagne's rise to international cricketing fame in the recent test matches, it was brought to my attention that I have in fact played against him. For a bit of background, I am, was a shit cricketer, doing my best to quit playing, and the only reason I would ever play is to see some mates and have a good feed in the innings break. It was a Sunday in 2014 playing against Sandwich Town CC in Kent, England. Greeted at the ground by my team captain, who I'd hardly played for, I was told that their overseas player, Marnus, was playing. 15 years old at the time, I batted 10, bowled pies, and often fielded at square leg. I knew I would be in for a long afternoon. Thankfully, on this occasion, my father was not in attendance. Marnus, I believe, came in at 4, played a few glorious cover drives and spanked a few sixes and quickly reached 50. It was shortly after this, my captain looked at me and rolled his shoulders whilst miming, "Warm up, mate. We weren't." Was this an inspired decision to try and get Marnus out, or just giving me a game? The latter, I assumed. I arrived at the crease only to realise Marnus had switched to his left hand, giving me a glimmer of hope. This glimmer was soon quashed as he would continue to spank the ball through the covers and over my head with his left hand. "Take a blow," said the skipper, after two hard overs, which turned out to be my last involvement of the day, whereas Marnus went on to make only 112 and take a few wickets with his leg spin. "Who is this cheeky fuck?" I asked myself as I stood at deep square leg in my own beta world. Does this display from Marnus surprise you, given his recent outings in the test match, and should I have quit cricket for good there and then? Cheers, Jamie.
Thanks for the question, Jamie. I guess the thing that sticks out in my mind is the image of Marnus Labuschagne changing hands and just hitting boundaries with his left hand, so that he's just not using the bat. He's literally just hitting it with his glove.
Punching balls.
Like hallway cricket.
Stokes could have done that, I reckon.
What is it about Labuschagne? Like, I mean, what is it? He's solid and he's a very good player, of course, and he's performed, but like he doesn't have, like, for example, he doesn't have a signature shot. Like, when I think of him, I don't, what's his shot? Like, if you had to say, "Oh, that's a fucking Labuschagne shot," what is it?
Cover drive? Through mid-wicket. Oh, okay, that's interesting. You've gone on different sides of the wicket.
What do you say, Pez?
Through mid-wicket, he's got some, he stands kind of in front of his stumps, he gets across and looks for the bowler to bowl at him, and he goes through mid-wicket. Yeah. But yeah, he's strong square, Labuschagne. Like he's not like chesty and down the ground and like, "You bowl the ball at me and everything will be returned back at you," in a kind of
which is what
power
we like and demand from our players in order to be special and transcendental.
Send it back from whence it came. He's more of a, "I'll use the pace and distribute." He's a distributor of the ball with hands and flicks and wrists and coordination. He has an aura about him, Marnus. Let's just have it right. You know, he's blessed.
Well, someone told us
he's magnetic. He's got magnetism.
Someone told us that Ponting really likes him. That's how he sort of got into the centre back. I forget who said that, but someone who would know.
Ponting, we're really told by him. A high place source that Ponting thinks he's the long term three, and if it's good enough for Ponting, it's good enough for me.
It kind of reminds me of Ponting a little bit, probably because he just uses a kookaburra and he's probably about the same height. So therefore, I see everyone as the same person as long as they're wearing baggy.
He's Australia's long term three, though.
He's Australia's long term three.
He's 100 tests.
100 tests.
That's going to annoy people.
It's the name of the show.
Name of the show. He's 100 tests.
He's certainly got a certain je ne sais quoi about him, no doubt. All right. Any other business for this episode?
Thanks for listening. No business. We'll do a preview of Old Trafford, where in the next couple of days we'll convince ourselves that Australia have not been utterly demoralised, rationally knowing that they have.
And for Australian fans out there who heard Breslin's prediction that the series is all over now, he did also say to us that he thought Australia would absolutely decimate England after the first test. So, you know, I don't know what to believe, but it's probably not Brezila. All right, see you next time.
I tell you what, if I'd have been Stokes here yesterday, I'd have had my shirt off, fucking spinning it around my head, running around the square, doing knee slides in my pads, proving to everyone that I wasn't a rig based selection. All of that shit. Like, how good was he? It was unreal. I've watched a couple of the highlights, it's just ridiculous.